You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Ever since its inception, many people have deplored the money spent on the space program. WAGS, of course, note that there are no shops in space, so the money is all spent on Earth. The critics either don't know about or choose to ignore the enormous benefits to society of the space program. When President Obama called the captains of the United States' space program to Florida's Kennedy Space Center for a conference to set the agenda for America's future space endeavors, he and the organizer NASA set aside one session to address this very issue. The panel of experts was directed to find ways to harness space to expand economic opportunity. At times, the discussion became heavy going, but if you, dear listener, stick with it, your attention will be well rewarded. The session was moderated by Laurie Garber, who is NASA's deputy administrator. By the way, you can see one of my photos of Laurie on the Sullen FM website. That's at www.sullenfm.com.au/space. Then go to my Florida diary. Now, Laurie began by explaining the components of President Obama's space plan.
An attempt here to delve even deeper into the really meaningful aspects of why we believe the investment in space, in R&D, and in the very programs that the president just outlined are going to be the best to help us develop a vibrant space economy of the future. I have a wonderful panel here today, and we're going to I'm going to ask them each to just give an overview of a few minutes so that we can start with the interaction of the panel. We do have roving microphones, so we'll ask you to use those. And just to begin, I would like to again sort of outline that the president's plan has this explicit goal of the creation and continuous improvement of American capabilities in space, which will open up new opportunities for the economy. And I know this is a shift that people have been talking about, certainly in the 25 years of space policy development that I've been participating. And so it's exciting today to be able to talk more about those details and the research that has gone into this and the very meaningful shift that we believe will help sustain a vibrant space future for us all. The second component is really that in the way we procure this commercially, our space transportation services are to provide those incentives for improvement in commercial capabilities and reduce costs, and that will allow us to develop the new private sector activities that employ these new capabilities. So it's a combined effort of the government taking what the government does best and investing in the R&D, going further, faster, beyond low Earth orbit, and then utilizing the private sector in its unique benefits that it brings, providing that innovation to take over those things that the government has historically done. So we have to, with this plan, shift from the previous architecture, and I know that's what's been difficult, but we need to adapt to a more open architecture that will advance our capabilities, and I believe that that is what the president has laid out. In addition, focusing on our R&D efforts on technologies is historically one of the real elements of NASA that has provided for the economic growth that the nation has seen over time, and it is time for NASA to get back to that. Right now, the international market alone for commercial space products and services is $175 billion, and NASA's investment in R&D needs to help us keep more of that at home. And I would also just close my opening comments with a look historically that, in fact, this is not something new, that a shift to having more private sector involvement is something that historically has been happening within space exploration since, for instance, the Robert Goddard's first flights that were his experiments in liquid fueled rocketry were funded by the Guggenheim family. And, in fact, telescopes, space observatories have been funded by private interests historically as well. So when you look at the Paul Allens and Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk's and Robert Bigelow's utilizing some of their resources for exploration in space, this is really a continuation historically of what we have done in this country, and We believe it is time to harness that again, that energy and excitement.
NASA's Deputy Administrator Laurie Garver next moved on to introduce the first of three panelists.
So I would like to invite our panelists to begin. We will start with Greg Juneman, who has a long career with the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, IFPTE. He's currently the president. He's held many positions over his 20 years there, including being the CFO. And he's been president since 2003. Is that correct?
2001.
Oh, my gosh. My notes are bad. And before working at IFPTE, he was employed for 17 years in Wisconsin, where he was a senior cost estimator and project planner. So Greg is going to talk to us about their views of the president's program and the investment in R&D and its value to the nation.
Okay, good. Yes, hello. I was telling Dale earlier, and I really feel like this. I'm really reminded of a time. I'm a union official, and I had to speak before the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO right before the 2006 governor's election. And I looked at the program, and it said keynote speaker Gregory Juneman, other featured speaker Henry Aaron. And I thought, well, who's going to want to listen to what I've got to say after hearing Henry Aaron? So I'd like to talk about our views, my union's views. We're the largest union at NASA, representing about 10,000 scientists, engineers, and technicians at NASA at sites across the nation, about our views on the president's program, not necessarily from a scientific viewpoint or an economic viewpoint, I guess somewhat economic, but more from, I think, a union rep's standpoint, because while I represent about 10,000 engineers and scientists at NASA, I also represent about 100,000 people who aren't at NASA. So they look at this program and say, why does this make sense? And in the labor movement, my union, the International Federation of Professional Technical Engineers, like many other unions in this country, are interested in jobs. We are still, even though the numbers look good the last time around, we're still facing very close to 10% unemployment in this country, and we consider it a major jobs crisis. So we look and say, okay, where are the jobs going to be? And what I tell my members is that, and I really strongly believe this, NASA is the place where we can make an investment into our country, into the scientific mind. It's the only place that I think that we can do that as taxpayers, that we can invest in our own society. It's where it's where the future is going to be. It's certainly in the creation of jobs. We all understand economically, job creation starts in the private sector. However, I've also seen in way too many cases, the private sector creates jobs and shifts them overseas. You know, so where we look to the Obama administration, particularly with NASA, in the creation of jobs is, through this investment, this is where we can make a real strategic investment into, the creation and maintenance of meaningful and lasting, sustaining jobs through new ideas, through new strategies, and through new innovation and technologies. And what I've talked about with my members, if we intend to stay a world power, we can't simply do so by the strength of will or through patriotic zeal, but it has to be through responsible investment in our own communities, in our youth, and in our own scientific minds. And I think the way that I've seen that we can do that, because again, I'm not going to talk specifically about space and earth science exploration, but about the scientific and technological byproducts that come about through the work at NASA. Certainly, if we just look at space exploration and earth science, those things alone that are done at NASA are remarkable in themselves. But looking at the technological transfers, the byproducts, I mean, we really have to stand up and see how much gains we can make both in the country and in our various communities through jobs that are created through NASA's technological byproducts. The president mentioned almost as a lark tang, but that's when I look at and see, like, the people who live on Main Street in Lincoln, Nebraska, they don't think much beyond that. I mean, they sort of see that. They see post-it notes. They heard about Michael Phelps' swimming suit that helped him to win 8 gold gold medals, you know, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what I find remarkable is NASA's work that has led to, you know, diagnostic procedures that bring us early detection of breast cancer. You know, those are the sorts of things within NASA that I think that create jobs that are important. And it seems to me, with all of the hoopla that's been spread about healthcare reform in this country, now is the perfect time, you know, to look at the important gains and breakthroughs that have been made on NASA, made by NASA, on things like the early detection of breast cancer and in cancer cells in men and women across this country. You know, and when I talk to some of my members who are, you know, NASA scientists, they say that, well, yeah, a lot of this has come about through their work on research on thermography. Is that right? I think that's part of the problem. You know, you go to people, you know, in Madison, Wisconsin, and you say, let's increase the taxes so we can have more research done on thermography. You'll get thrown out of a room, right? It's like, what is that? What the heck is thermography? And it kind of reminds me of when I started as a union representative, when I was the secretary treasurer before I became the president. I met with one of my members who was complaining about management's escalating interference into his occupational environment through systemic yet innocuous intrusions into his work life. And I said, oh, so they're nickel and diming you to death. And he said, oh, that's perfect. And I said, well, this is why you need a union. You can't even speak plain English, you know, no matter how smart he is. But in plain English, what's really being done that's incredible is, you know, the Cleveland Clinic is doing really great collaborative work on research on heart disease. You know, and I think the only ones who know about that are the people that work there in that general area. Yet this is really important work. You know, that there's work, there's byproducts at NASA, you know, that come out that, you know, the micro batteries that are used to power robots and satellites are used to power pacemakers. You know, and nobody knows about this stuff, and they really should. People should know about this. They should talk about this. They should understand this is why, you know, it's important that we have NASA beyond space exploration and earth science. And these are where jobs can be created, you know, that are going to help us, again, beyond NASA. And it's sort of like we need to answer the question, why? You know, why is this necessary for this work to get done beyond the scientific community, to get out of the inside the baseball stuff, right? You know, the following my notes here. Okay. So I do need to sort of mention this because Charlie Bolden said let's sort of like dare to disagree with one another once in a while. I think very much of this stuff needs to be discussed on the NASA television channel. I don't know who's in charge of that, but somebody said it's like watching paint dry. I think it's more like watching dry paint, because watching paint dry would actually be something happening.
I think you might be on it right now. So
if I see the logo, maybe I blend into how boring the things can be. So, yeah, in any event, the other, and I do got to say, I mean, and I read recently, and this is sort of, I'll fault the press a bit for this. I read recently something about that there's work being done, very much of what NASA's work is, you know, that's done, the research work, has to be done, and you know this, at zero gravity. So work was done on the space station, I read this someplace recently, that, you know, was the investigation of the HIV genome. So I talked to a reporter about this from a nationally known publication who I won't advertise for free, and said, you know, why aren't you talking about this? This could lead to the cure for HIV/AIDS. And he said, everybody knows about that. I said, nobody knows about this stuff. Nobody. I mean, we need to be talking about this. People need to be hearing about this, and maybe a lot of that is our fault. You know, but again, this is the sort of thing I think that leads to jobs, that leads to, you know, real meaningful need for investment in NASA. And, of course, beyond all of that, I mean, and I look at my own union. I represent engineers and technicians outside of the medical field. My own union, I represent engineers, technicians, and scientists at Boeing and at General Electric. And the work that's done there by NASA, you know, into the improvement of jet engines and wing design, you know, the fuel efficiency gains that have been made by NASA are just incredible, that have been passed on to the private sector. You know, and so we now have quieter, more fuel-efficient jet engines, you know, which means less noise pollution, less air pollution, so that as some NASA scientists are studying the effects that we're having on our own globe, you know, NASA is also taking positive action toward improving those things. I've got friends who are in the firefighters. Not only just the firefighters union, but I got friends who are firefighters. And when I look and see the sort of work that NASA is doing on flame retardant materials that firefighters can use. And I heard just recently that that NASA has developed these like face masks that if the firefighters on September 11th on the recovery mission had these, they wouldn't have gotten the insides of their throats irreparably burned. You know, this is incredible stuff that NASA is doing beyond space exploration, beyond Earth science, that needs to be talked about within the general public. And if it's not being talked about, shame on us for not doing it, because I think we need to bring that out there so this makes sense, so NASA makes sense to the people on Main Street in Lincoln, Nebraska, who are helping to pay for these things. And certainly when we look at the remarkable work that's done by NASA in space exploration and Earth science that I'm sure others are going to be talking about, you know, it's just incredible work. And it really needs our investment, our continuous investment as a society. Because when I consider other civilizations that have faltered throughout history, and I think it's because in a lot of ways it's because they stopped gazing outward in wonder and began just staring inward, you know, in self-interest. And then they began to falter over time. And we can't let that happen in this country. That's why we need to make investments into our space program and Earth science, because, you know, through those things, and the scientists will tell me this, and maybe a lot of people know this, that after these projects are done, and they write these technical reports and say, here's practical uses for the things that we've learned, you know, in launching this rocket or launching the space shuttle. And these things can be used in our general society, in general communities, in the creation of jobs, in the creation of industries, in meaningful, sustainable jobs that'll stay with this country. You know, then that seems to me to be, that's a very smart investment that we can make. You know, and I sort of look at it and think, even the most conservative Tea Party people, if they figured out only less than a penny of our each tax dollar goes into NASA. I mean, it's an incredible investment. I read recently that we look at our partners where a lot of my members' jobs go, right? And in terms of a national budget, China spends about 11% of its budget on education. India spends about 9.98% of its budget on education. Japan is about 9.3% of its budget on education. In the United States, we spend about 2% of our budget on education. China will graduate, and we've got, if you think the unemployment numbers are bad now, of course, I'll just digress here for just a minute. The unemployment numbers in this country don't really tell the story, as we all know. That's just the measure of the people who are collecting unemployment insurance. But we're about to graduate 500,000 students, both out of college and out of high school. Maybe it's more than that. I think it's actually millions that are going to come onto the streets that won't be part of the unemployment numbers in this country. You know, but we're going to graduate however many engineers we're going to get out. China will graduate about 3.5 times more engineers than us. So will India. Japan, with half of our population, graduates twice as many engineers as we do. And we lose 40% of our graduates to other countries, because where are they going to get jobs? Especially if we don't invest in ourselves, invest in our own young minds. It seems to me in so many ways that NASA provides sort of the golden eggs of our society, right? And the goose is easily fed. You know, that if we look to invest in our own futures, NASA is the way to do it. And I would just close by, you know, paraphrasing. Remember that great line by Albert Einstein when he talked about the high cost of an education? That I would just think, if we consider the cost of investing in our own futures, consider the alternative. And that's why my union wholeheartedly endorses the president's budget for NASA. Thanks.
A union organizer's view of how people could be made aware of the many benefits of expenditure on space activities. His comments on the paucity of educational funding in the United States is one we often heard during hearings of President Bush's Moon, Mars, and Beyond. On the space show this evening, we are at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida with coverage of the Space Conference on America's Future Space Efforts. Tonight's topic is how to harness space to expand economic opportunity. NASA's Deputy Administrator Laurie Garber is moderating proceedings.
So our next speaker is Dale Ketchum. He is a representative on the panel as a lifelong resident of Florida's Space Coast, as a graduate of the University of Florida, been involved in the space program directly or indirectly for his entire career. He was at Rockwell International working on the shuttle for a decade, worked for a district director for Congressman Jim Baucus on the House Space Subcommittee, and the former director of space programs for Enterprise Florida, the state's economic development agency at the time. And he is currently the director of Spaceport Research and Technology Institute at the University of Central Florida. Dale, we're looking forward to your comments on our future plans in space.
Thank you, Lori. I guess I want to take advantage of the fact that since this event is occurring in Florida, focus on, for the most part, on the impacts to Florida. And, you know, it's happening here. This is our home court advantage. We're going to exploit it. But I think the applications are generally across the nation. What the president's doing, from my perspective, is extremely important. And I say that in a very personal context. When my father started putting me through college at the University of Florida, we've been here all our lives. So my dad moved here in 1955, and I was not very big in 1955. I learned to walk on Cocoa Beach with the original astronauts. And when he was putting me through college, it was 1972 when the Apollo program was being canceled, and the devastation in this community was immense. I think we went from 36,000 to about 14,000 in 18 months working here at KSC, and that was back when the economy was about half what it is today. And, you know, that occurred because all we did was launch here. That's what KSC does. We launch. Then now I'm going to be putting my kids through college through the painful transition out of the shuttle work program. And that's going to be extremely difficult. It won't be nearly as bad as the Apollo, but it's still going to hurt like heck to this community. And I guess what inspires me the most about what the president's trying to do is the proposals he's put forward allow Florida to have a big piece of the increased investment in research and development and technology development, and to allow us to broaden our business base here at KSC so we're no longer focused strictly on operations. We now will have an institutionalized pieces of research budgets, of program development, of program management. And this will make it so that, fortunately, my kids won't have to go through the same sort of economic whipsaw that occurs when your programs cycle down. For the same reason that if your retirement fund is all invested in one stock, when that stock goes down, you get hammered. It'll allow Florida to be a much more diverse and robust, and hopefully not even solely focused on NASA as a manned space launch activity for that particular agency. So it's inspiring to me that we're going to finally get what a lot of us in the community have been seeking for a long time, and that's a diversified business case for NASA here in the state of Florida. On a broader context, I think what the president's proposing, when as we heard him today and as we listened to him, some of us had the opportunity to meet with him for 15, 20 minutes before he spoke. And it was a real opportunity for the president, who's a very approachable gentleman. I mean, he comes in with his retinue of Secret Service. It's rather intimidating. But he promptly walks over and starts talking to you in a very offhand manner, and was able to effectively convey that he's a genuine guy and that his statements about his investment and commitment to human spaceflight is genuine. It's personal. And he was able to articulate not an in-depth understanding of physical principles of, you know, orbital mechanics. That's not his field. But a genuine understanding of the nature of the challenges that confront this industry, the nature of the challenges that we're going to face trying to get out beyond low Earth orbit, and that his commitment was personal. That was encouraging to me. I think what he's talking about wanting to do, which is to bring the commercial sector into low Earth orbit, that to me resonates very well, because I've been here all my life. You know, I've seen, you know, all of the different vehicles, and I understand that the commercial sector is trying to develop technology that is essentially 50 years old. We've been putting humans in space for 50 years. The Russians have been doing it for longer than that. If not now, then when are we going to turn it over to the commercial sector? You've got an opportunity. You have a turning point. The shuttle is retiring. In my mind, it makes sense to do that now. The paradigm for a lot of people here is a little difficult to understand because, not difficult to understand, it's difficult. It's a challenge to them because a robust commercial launch industry is not going to be a labor-intensive launch industry. It's going to be efficient, lean, and what where we will make up the difference is in the market activity that will occur with ever-increasing launches here. If we are launching humans into space for NASA on a commercial vehicle, if we're having a robust Air Force activity, I know they'd like to have more launches and get their launch rate, their launch costs down, as well as the commercial sector, the more you get that activity, the more you will lower, as in any economic model, the more you do something, the lower is your cost going to be to do it. The more we lower the cost of payloads into space, the more people are going to want to put their payloads in space. As if we start becoming the launch cluster that we want to be here in Florida, then that will attract additional second and third tier suppliers, the vendors, they'll all want to come here. We create a standard economic cluster. That's very encouraging to us. A lot of us, when, you know, 20, 30 years ago, I think it's safe to say more than 90% of all the commercial payloads in the world, or at least the free world, were launched from Florida. Now we're less than 10%, I believe. It's, you know, we've been fighting that burden for a long time. It's easy to point at the Air Force and say it's all your guys' fault with the range problems. That's not a fair characterization. It's part of it. But, you know, we managed to create an economic system that wasn't good for us but created, you know, French Guiana and the Kourou launch station and created an environment that was great for everybody but us. And what we have now is a real opportunity. I think the president's given us the opportunity and the resources and the initiative to go forward and start to recapture a large share of that commercial marketplace. Because they do want to launch here. It's a lot more commercial providers are going to want to provide come to Florida because it's much easier to spend a week or two with your payload on the beaches of Cocoa Beach than it is in the jungles of Guyana. It's just the business model will work for us if we can get over these critical components and technical challenges. But I think the president has given us the initiative, the resources, and the direction to go do that. So that's particularly exciting to me. I use the analogy of what we were resembles a mid-20th century Detroit. It was it was single program focused. It was very labor intensive. And what the president is hoping to allow us to do is transition into a more robust economic marketplace that resembles Silicon Valley. Now, understand this, it's a commercial marketplace. So we are going to have winners. We are going to have losers. We are going to have litigation. We are going to have layoffs. All the good stuff that comes with a robust capitalist environment. But that is exactly the sort of environment that America does best in. It's exactly sort of environment that we will best compete with the Chinese and the Indians and the Russians and everybody else who's trying to get into the space marketplace. That to me is who I want competing in getting into low Earth orbit and capturing the commercial marketplace in the future. For KSC, I think, in particular, and my guess is it's going to apply to centers across the board. KSC, as a launch operator, has been a rather, over the generation that we've been here, has been rather insular. The activity stays inside the fence. I mean, the people are very involved outside the fence, involved with their communities, their churches, their not-for-profits. But the business activity has been inside the fence, and the contractors have responded accordingly. I think what the president is proposing allows us to get more involved in research activity that will engage the local community on a more effective manner and integrate collectively all of us. Additionally, the conversations that we've been having to date talk about better integrating. There have been some pilot projects run through, like the NASA Shuttle Logistics Depot, where they're trying to see if we can't aggregate the demand of the Air Force, the Army, and NASA to address industrial base issues, because the industrial base of the United States is a big problem. The federal government is an appallingly bad customer to the contractor community because we're buying small pieces that are very expensive, that are only ones and twos. It's and you're the prime contractor, the private sector doesn't really know. They don't have a stable, sustained requirement that they can then, you know, let go out and finance to build the capability to meet that requirement. Office of Secretary of Defense is funding some programs that will allow us to look, can we aggregate that demand so that the Air Force and the Army and NASA and Department of Energy are collectively knowing what they're going to be purchasing when and can provide a more sustained demand to the private sector so that they know what their needs are going to be, what their big customer is going to want in the future that they can then go out and borrow money to prepare for. And that's particularly important where that really gets into the industrial base issues is how that impacts not so much the primes but the second and third tier suppliers. That's a big problem. That's exactly why the Shuttle Logistics Depot came into being, because NASA told them, do you want to build a piece of the shuttle because we're going to fly 50 times a year and you'll be able to build lots of them. And they said, sure. And then when we ended up flying 4 or 5 times a year, they said, we don't want any part of this business because we're not making money. And the Shuttle Logistics Depot came about because NASA had to take over responsibility for manufacturing, refurbishment, all this equipment, because the private sector said, we don't want your business. And that problem is growing nationally in terms of the federal government being an unattractive partner to the private sector. And if the federal government, if NASA and the Air Force are unattractive customers to the private sector, we're all going to pay for it, both with increased costs and also the industrial base, which is our primary defense, both militarily, intelligence-wise, and economically. We're undermining the primary thing that defends the United States of America. I think what the president is proposing gives us an opportunity to better integrate those activities, and that's good. I would like to see Florida lead the way because we are sort of the epicenter, at least in space, of both NASA activities, the Air Force activities, and now the commercial activities. That's going to take some imagination and some innovation, but I think clearly we have a president and administration where we're going to have an opportunity to come forward with good ideas.
The views of Dale Kitchum, the director of the University of Florida's Spaceport Research and Technology Institute. The issues he talked about were hot ones, raising high passions everywhere I went on Florida's space coast. We'll have more from this 2010 April conference on next week's Space Show. This has been Episode 9 in a series researched, written, produced and presented by Andrew Rennie. Previous episodes can be downloaded from the internet at www.southernfm.com.au/space and then go to the 2011 documentaries page. Now, Southern FM is one word lowercase on the net, so it's www.southernfm.com.au/space.
Your voice in the community. The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.